We'll start here on Tuf Mem Gimel 443, which is on page 32. And we're talking about what to do with your chametz on Erev Pesach in the morning of Yudalet. There are different hours. There's the sixth hour, there's the fifth hour. There are hours in which you can eat the chametz, you can't eat the chametz, you have to destroy the chametz. Hours in which it's also banah, you're not allowed to do anything with the chametz. So that's the subject of this siman, and it's Tuf Mem Gimel, and it's on page 32. Communion late. Maybe we'll just close the store behind us. Oh, thank you so much. Chametz mishe shosel amala biyom yudalid osuban no. Now, on a Doraisa level, chametz becomes osuban no only at midday, which is the beginning of the seventh hour. However, midrabanan, they made a gzera, they were afraid that you might make a mistake in terms of identifying the time, and the margin of error here is an hour, and therefore they required that chametz be gotten rid of at the beginning of the sixth hour. That's when it's asur banna. So let's take a look at the Mishnah Berurah Sif Katan Aleph. The Mishnah Berurah says asur banna mid oraisa. Now, according to the Mishnah Berurah, sheishol salamala in the Mechaber, it's not the way I interpret it, which means the beginning of the sixth hour. He's interpreting it that it's the end of the sixth hour. How do I know this? Because he says midoraisa, and he's really copying the Ber Heitev. And he says the following: Yolef b'gemar b'dichsiv lo sochal olav chametz, which means you're not allowed to shech the korban Pesach when you have chametz in your possession. And Chazal say that the hour that's ro'i l'shchitas ha-Pesach is the hour in which you have to get rid of your chametz, and that's michatzos hayom v'elech shehu bein harbayim. So in the context of the laws of korban Pesach, we'll find that the shchitas ha-Pesach was done bein harbayim, which means from midday and on. U'mishosha osu b'achila osu b'ano, and when the Torah prohibits chametz in achila, prohibits it in hano as well, because the Torah says lo ye achel chametz. So now at this moment that the Torah prohibits achilas chametz, it prohibits hanoas chametz, it also prohibits ownership over the chametz. And if you have chametz in your possession at the time of the shechita, even though you yourself are not shechting the korban Pesach, but the shechita here is only telling, the shechita Pesach is only telling us when is l'shah ha-re'uya l'shechita, and that at that point and on, chametz becomes asur in what we call a triple header. Number one, it's asur b'achila. Number two, it's asur b'anah. Number three, it's asur in shehiya, means you're not allowed to retain your ownership over the chametz. Now, the Mishnah Berurah writes that as far as the Isur Kares is concerned, the Isur Kares for eating chametz, that is postponed until the Laila, until the emergence of Tesvav B'Nisan, and Tesvav B'Nisan depends upon Laila. Now, as far as the violation of Bal Yiroa Bayi Motzi is concerned, we have a machlokas. Le'inyan Bal Yiroa Bayi Motzi is kimu kama poskim, according to the opinion of some poskim. This is all based on the Magid Mishnah, the Raivin, and other Rishonim. The Eino Ofer B'Masha Masha Chometz Mishay Shol Sulemala Kolzman Shelo Higia Yimei HaPesach Gufa. So even though the Isra Achila, and for that matter the Isra Hano, begin with the end of the sixth hour, the beginning of the seventh hour, because of the pasuk lo tochal olav chametz. But nevertheless, as far as Bal Yiroa Bayi Motzi is concerned, according to this school of thought, just like we spoke about the Isur Kares in Achilas Chametz, this is postponed until lo laila. So we now have three different periods of time. We have one period on a Doraisa level. We'll see with the Rabbanu, we're going to have another period of time. But on a Doraisa level, we have three periods of time. There's up until the end of the sixth hour, that means the morning of the 14th, up until midday. At that point, chametz is mutter, again on a doraisa level. You can eat it, and certainly you can benefit from it by selling it or feeding your dog. Then we get to the beginning of the sixth hour. The beginning of the seventh hour, the end of the sixth hour. At that point, we activate the principle of lo sochal chametz, that you're not allowed to eat chametz. And whenever the Torah prohibits achilas chametz, it prohibits even hanah from chametz. On top of that, we have an iser achila with what's called a lav. A lav means if you violate it, you get malchus. Nothing worse than that. And then we get to the third period of time, and that's with Lila, when we enter into Tesvav. Now the iser achilas chametz incurs a chiyuv karis, becomes a much more severe iser. And now the Torah says you're not allowed to have chametz in your possession. Bal yirah, bal yimotzeh. We haven't yet gotten to a second opinion which would hold that bal yirah, bal yimotzeh emerges with the iser achila at midday. But right now we're holding that the iser bal yirah, bal yimotzeh is postponed, is delayed until nightfall. So again, do we have all three periods of time? Let me just go over one more time for myself. If it helps anyone else, that's good. We have chametz up until midday on the 14th. On a d'oraisa level, again, it's mutter. Then we get to the 14th midday, when the Torah says, lo sochal olav chametz. And now at this point, the Torah formulates an iser achilas chametz, which includes also hanah min hachametz. And then we get, with nightfall, another two upgrades. We get chametz achila upgraded to an iser kares, and now we add lo yirah and lo yimotze. So again, if we're in the middle of the Mishnah Berurah, but if you keep one finger on the Mechaber says chametz mishei shos, it means the end of the sixth hour, lamala biyom yudalid osur bahanoa, because once you hit midday, it's chametz, and chametz is osur bahanoa, and all this is doraisa. Again, would you be chayiv kares? The answer is no. Would you be in violation of bal yirah, bal yimotzeh? So far, the answer is no, before we get to the second opinion. But as far as the iser achila and hanah is concerned, on a doraisa level, with a lav and malchus, that emerges with the end of the sixth hour, midday on Yudalit. Now let's go back to see if we can finish up the Mishnah Berurah. Again, we're still in Mishnah Berurah number Aleph, but we're halfway through. He says, "Le'inyan bal yirah bal yimotzeh iskimu kama poskim." We mentioned before the Magid Mishnah that eino over al mashe mashe bechametz misheisha salamala kol zman shlo yigia yimei pesach gufa. And why is it that the iser bal yirah bal yimotzeh is postponed until the laila? Midechsiv shivas yomim siyor lo yimotzeh vateichem. Or alternatively, lo yirah lechasar b'chol gvecha shivas yamin. The Torah limits bal yirah and bal yimotzeh to shivas yamin. So shivas yamin means from laila. So that it's very interesting. Even though midday on the 14th, you are enjoined from eating chametz on a doraisa level, and that includes even hanah. But nevertheless, it doesn't say that you have to get rid of your chametz. You can maintain possession over your chametz. But again, that's going to be impossible because the Torah says tashvisu.
And it's not yours.
No, I meant to say, I'm sorry, you're right. I didn't formulate it right. What I meant to say is you're allowed to leave it in your possession. Not that you own it, right? Because it's also about Noah, and he's had no love mamon, but you can keep it in your house. You know, I would have said, wait a minute. If the Torah is saying, get rid of your chametz, or your roll, or your motzeh, I don't want you to see this chametz because you might come to eat it, then those isurim, bal yirah bal yimotzeh, should be merged together with the iser achila. But again, that's the unique shita here of the yesh poskim, that for some reason the Torah postpones the iser of bal yirah or bal yimotzeh until nightfall, even though the iser achila merges with the end of the sixth hour, midday. So you have a 6 hour period of time from midday on the 14th until nightfall, going into the 15th, in which chametz is also b'achila b'hanah midoraisa, but you can let your chametz sit on the table. You don't have to get rid of it. But again, all this is very difficult when we get to tashbisu, because the Torah commands us to destroy the chametz. He says, even according to the Magid Mishnah, he has not violated the law if he leaves the chametz sitting on his table past midday until he gets to Laila. But nevertheless, over b'chol rega v'rega, he is still in violation, not of Bal Yiroah, but every moment shemasha chametz bebeis, so he leaves the chametz there in his house, he violates a mitzvah asei d'tashpisu siyar b'batecha. Because the mitzvah of destroying chametz is chal with midday, from the end of the sixth hour and on. Now this kibavur b'shas is a very long, complicated sugya. The Gemara has like five different approaches. How do we know that the mitzvah tashbisu applies midday on the 14th? But everybody agrees that tashbisu applies midday. So it's a fascinating idea here that to violate the lavim of possessing chametz, we have to wait till nightfall. But the mitzvah asay of tashbisa requires that you destroy the chametz midday. So there's no way under the sun that you could allow the chametz to exist in your house after chatzos hayom.
But there's no malchus.
Very strange. When you think about it, you know, just balabatish. I mean, without getting into lumbus, it's paradoxical. I would have assumed that tashbisa and bal yiroah by much is a package deal. Just that it's the flip side. You know, one is the kuvah say and one is the shevi alta say. So you're enjoined from having chametz in your possession. That's bal yiroah by yimotzeh. And now destroy the chametz. Imagine this. The Torah is telling you to destroy the chametz, but there's no violation of bal yiroah by yimotzeh. That's the paradox. And all this is according to the Magid Mishnah. Let's take a look in the Shaar HaTzion. Number Beis, which is like three lines down from the top of the Shaar HaTzion on the bottom of your page, he quotes the Magen Avraham, B'Shem HaMagen Mishnah, V'Chein Das HaRaivid, Umaram, K'mo Shekasev B'Sefer Chok Yaakov, U'mikomakom Lo Briril He, the Das Rashi B'Bakama, U'Bepsachim Daf Dalid, it says Mishesh Al Solomala over Bebal Yiroah V'chein Mashba Das Rabbeinu Chanano V'chein Kosova Itur. Basically, the Mishnah Berurah in his Shaar HaTzion is telling us that many Rishonim seem to assume that this Bal Yiroah by Yimotzei midday, and he has on the list Rashi, none other than Rashi. And again, intuitively, it makes a lot of sense if the Torah is telling you to destroy the chametz. Obviously, the Torah doesn't want you to possess the chametz. I'm thinking out loud, is there any way of distinguishing, is there a nafkamina between Bal Yiroah by Yimotzeh and Tashbisu? In other words, what I mean to say, is there a way that we can tell you?
Look, there's two different things.
Yeah.
D'oraisa, the word Pesach means only the 14th, Manakrova. Then you have something called Chagamatzos. Chagamatzos starts at night. So certain dinim belong to Chagamatzos. So certain dinim belong to the Zman HaKrova of the Korban. Zman HaKrova of the Korban is the afternoon only, from Chatzot Hayom till at night.
Right.
So if Torah says, V'yom HaRishon, Tashbisu Sormi Botechem, Chazal say, Rashi explained, Chumash as well, Rishon means the day before, and on the 14th.
Correct.
So dinim have to do with the 14th is fine. Chagamatzos has its dinim, but Yom HaRishon belongs to Shiva Sayomim, that starts at night. They're two different yarn. Zman HaKrova, I say, but the Torah calls Pesach, what we call Erev, and then Chagamatzos has its deal. It's a different
Right, but I'm just wondering, I agree with everything you say, but what boggles my mind is that if you're holding on to your chametz on Erev Pesach, you're violating, he says, the mitzvah seif tashbis. Why did the Torah go one step further and give me a lav? Then obviously, you know, I'm not asking philosophical why. I'm just saying in the Gedarim of Halacha, it's paradoxical, you know, because if the Torah would say, okay, Bal Yiroah b'Yimotzeh is postponed till Laila, like you say, Chagamatzos, then I would have derived the logical conclusion that the Torah has no objection to my keeping the chametz around. But then the Torah turns around and says, Tashbisu, destroy the chametz. So how can I destroy the chametz?
Preparation for the Hakrova. The Hakrova, which is Dafka in the afternoon of the 14th, this is part of the preparation to be able to do the Korban HaPesach. Afterwards, you have
But what I'm asking is there a hechetimtzah? Would it be a possibility of holding on to my chametz in a legal way, such that I don't violate by Rabbi Matzah, but it's and it's legal. In other words, by postponing by Rabbi Matzah, you're giving me. It would be nice if the Torah would give me the opportunity somehow to maintain ownership or possession of my chametz until by Rabbi Matzah emerges, which is at night. But then the Torah turns around and says Tashvisu. So I don't know how you could. I'm thinking out loud. Let's say, for example, if you would be mavatil, let me just think. I'm just thinking to myself here. Don't lock me up for talking to myself. If you were to be makayim tashpisu through bittul, so the chametz is there. Maybe this is a possibility. I'm just thinking out loud. Tashpisu doesn't necessarily mean to destroy the chametz, because then again, how would you have a hechetimtza of possessing chametz? You're not in violation of Rabbi Matzah, but yet you have to destroy it. That's paradoxical. But maybe tashbisu doesn't mean destroy your chametz, so you could have it in your physical possession, meaning as Mitch said before, it's in your house. But you fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu through bittul, and the Torah says the following: you know what? At some point or other, I don't want your chametz in your possession at all. Meaning, even if it's bittul, even if there is bittul, and there was bittul, so that protects you from tashbisu, that's a fulfillment of tashbisu, and we have to figure out how that works, but Rashi does assume in Masechta Pesachim Adav Dalet that tashbisu could be fulfilled through bittul, and the Ran in his introduction has this whole superstructure. According to Rashi, the Torah gave you two options of how to fulfill tashbisu, whether it's through physical destruction or through bittul. But the chametz is still there, even after bittul. So you're not in violation of anything. Now, again, what's the philosophy here? I don't know, but maybe at some point the Torah says, you know what? I want you to live in a chametz-free society. And even though possession-wise you have already... You've already protected yourself, and it's not technically yours. You know, ka'afr diara hefker ka'afr. It's not yours. Let's say if we identify bittul as hefker, but nevertheless,
sitting in your nadlan, sitting in your chatzer,
and maybe that's Bal Yerubay Matzeh, and that's the chiddush of Bal Yerubay Matzeh, that even though you were mevatel your chametz, you fulfilled your mitzvah of tashbisu. But I don't want that chametz in your nadlan, as you say. And maybe that emerges with, like you say, chag ha-matzos. You know, it's matzah and no pesach. No chametz, I meant to say. All right, let's go on. Now we have a ramah. So we're on the top line in the main body. And the ramah says the following. Afilu chemtzo. I don't know. For some reason, do you have vowels in your
chametzo?
Chametzo. I don't know if that's. I always was taught chemtzo, but I'm not a bucky and dig. Anyway, he says chametzo. Shal eno Yehudi asur lehenos mimenu. Now this is intuitively correct. I'm not sure why the Ramah felt compelled to be machadish this chiddush. To me, it sounds like pshita maika mashmalon. But he's telling me that you can't have benefit from any chametz, even if it belongs to an Einu Yehudi. I think, again, I haven't seen the Mishnah Berurah clearly yet. I'm not sure if he's going to address this question, but maybe we could add the following. That since the chametz belongs to an Einu Yehudi, and the Torah removes it from Tashbisu, and from Bal Yerubay Matzah, maybe the Torah would remove it even from the Iser HaNoch, because of the bialis of a Noch. Let's see if the Mishnah Berurah will help us at all here. And he says the following. Afilu chemtzo, or he has it as chametzo, shal aku. Toha b'doraisa lok tziv, in the Torah it doesn't say chametzcha, that it has to be your chametz. Right? It says lo se ochel chametz, el chametz tama. So without qualifying, it means any chametz, bein the Yisrael, bein the aku. What does he mean? Le'inyan Pesach, meaning Leil Pesach. Yeah, Pesach, I think, means from nightfall. And the Rambam wants to tell us that there's an Isur Hanah from the end of the sixth hour, and that includes all chametz, right? Lo yochel chametz means any chametz. It doesn't say chemtzecha, and it includes even chametz shel akum. Again, I still think my point from before is well taken, meaning that there was a havamina here that since the chametz is owned by a guy, the ownership of the guy has halachic implications as far as the chametz is concerned. For example, we said that there's no bali rabbi matzeh. So it could very well be that I can't keep chametz in my possession, in my nadlan, as you say, after bittul, but I could keep chametz shel nachri in my possession. Again, that might be totally what we discussed earlier about whether you were makabel achrayis, not makabel achrayis. But theoretically, if you were not makabel achrayis, it could very well be that the chametz shel nachri could stay in your house. Again, you may want to put up a mechitza to make sure you don't eat it, but you don't violate any surim. So that we see that the bialus of the nachri in this case is a so to speak, a positive negative force. What I mean by positive negative force, it's a mafkia, and it removes the status of that chametz as far as Bali Rabbi Yomotzi is concerned, certainly as far as Tashbisu, and maybe one could argue that even as far as Hanno is concerned. Okay, but the bottom line is, as the Ramah points out very explicitly, the Iser Hana includes even Chametz Shel Nachri. Now, what happens if you pass a bakery? So that's what the Bir Allah addresses here. Kosvu Achronim B'Simon Tov Mem Ches Dilefizeh Osu L'Riach Gam Pas Chamo Shel Akum.
Yeah,
because that's also called Hana. And you and I know that in today's contemporary world, this you have bakeries that are so massive, you know, and sometimes you can chalish, you know, you really enjoy the shmek, you know. I know here in Israel, I pass by, you know, Angel's Bakery or Berman's. It's like, wow, you know, you smell it. So we don't even pay attention to this. And I think the Mishnah Berurah here in the Bir Halacha is pointing it out to us that on Yontif, on Pesach, you got to be careful about enjoying the smell of Paschama Shalakum. Oh, then the question is Me'ilah, right? There's a very famous principle in Me'ilah that Ein Berech Mishum Me'ilah. So even though in Kodshim I'm not allowed to benefit from Kodshim, but let's say the Kohanim would very often smell the pleasant odor of the Kodshim. Is there an Isa Me'ilah? So that's what he quotes here in the name of the Chemed Moshe. Does anybody know who the Chemed Moshe was? Because he quotes him very often. I never got a chance to look it up. I have to write myself a note to look up the Chemed Moshe. I have this basic Malkit Sfarim. You familiar with that? You know, it's four volumes. They tell you who are the authors of every single book that was ever written. And he writes, "Mefakbek beikar dina dereach pas chametz afil beYisrael." He says, even if the chametz was owned by a Jew, again, in the case of a Jew, it's rare to have Jews baking chametz on Pesach, chas v'shalom, right? So therefore, it's not such a practical issue. But theoretically, if the pas belongs to Yisrael, says the Chemed Moshe, you're allowed to smell it and enjoy the benefit of the smell. L'fimai dekaimel biyoredeya simon kufches. Now, when do we apply the principle of kolv marav v'reach ein bo mishum me'ilah? That's only if it's not made for smelling. But let's say the ketores, for example, if you have hanor from the ketores, that itself might be a violation of me'ilah and an isa hanor, even though it's only reach, because there it's an omed l'reach, and this has tremendous nafkaminas in Hilchas Brachos. You know, when do you make a brach on reach? For example, if it's omed l'reach, then you make a brach on it. If it's not omid l'reach, you don't make a brach on it. That's where we distinguish between hadasim and some of the other binim. That hadasim is omid l'reach, and that would engender a din that you're not letting him smell hadasim if it's part of a lulav. Question is, if you take it out of the dalet binim and it's sukkah, so you might argue that's royal hadasim if it's hadas kosher. Maybe you're still not allowed to smell it. I don't know. The old dinim esrog is an issue. Whether you're allowed to smell an esrog during the 7 days. So this is the issue of a davar ha'omed l'reach, and he wants to point out that if if you were baking a bread, you're not baking it for the sake of the reach. Again, I'm wondering if there is a mitzvah where you're baking something simply for the sake of the reach. Could it be chametz that's like an incense, you know? Luditzur, I'm saying theoretically, I don't have a practice, maybe we could Google it and come up with a reality where you are using something as an incense and it is chametz dik. There's a chametz element inside, maybe tarovus chametz. Mitch, you're smiling. I mean, you know such a thing?
I was thinking maybe a pregnant woman decides that she needs to smell something. It's good.
So she bakes something chametz stick in order to smell the smell. Right? You remind me of the Mishnah in Gittin there about Achso Bulmus. You remember that a pregnant woman sometimes, it's also a Mishnah at the end of Yoma, you know, she smells something, it has a tremendous impact on her.
The real estate agents may suggest that sometimes to bake something nice when people come into their home, it becomes more of a...
Oh, if you're selling your apartment, let's say, so it has a psychological impact. Yeah, you know? I wonder if it's not a little bit of a mecha post, but okay, yeah, you're allowed to beautify your object as long as you don't mislead anybody. There's a whole sugya, you know, but mitzvah, if you have an old cow and you make it look like a new cow in order to sell it for a higher price, whether you're allowed to do that. He says, Havel be'emes lo brira ikar dovrzeh impas eino omid l'reach. Okay, so he says, if you look as far as the bracha that you make on reach in Siman Reish Tezayin, you'll see two opinions about that. So maybe there is such a thing as a chometz that's omid l'reach, pas omid l'reach. Maybe there's something that passes eino omid l'reach. I mean, you and I would have said that the purpose of a pas is achila, but you know, when the smell sort of enhances the experience of achila or attracts you to want to eat it, maybe that itself makes it omid l'reach. Okay. Now he tells you that chometz v'pesach is osur b'mashahu. Now, what does this have to do with reach? So he says the following, that reach, even in a davar sheino omed l'reach, is considered hana mashu. In other words, it's not an official, full blasted hana, but it does register as hanas mashu. And since chametz and pesach is also been mashu, therefore, even the reach, although normally reach is not something of substance, it's not tangible, and it's not subject to anah, but nevertheless, it's osur b'mashu, and therefore even this reach is osur. So the Chofetz Chaim is not excited about the chemed Moshe. He doesn't want you smelling any chametz that's been baked, because that's a violation of anah. The ayin b'zeh b'bira gra. I guess he means the bira gra in Siman Reish Tezayin. Again, if we have time for this, this would be a nice research project. You have to take reach very seriously. But then he says, "Ubar min dein." Forget about all that. Wow. So here the Mishnah Berurah did a lot of research and came up with a whole new idea, which he bases on the different poskim. He says that maybe there's a chashash of achila. Maybe the gzera of achila would be whenever you smell something that has a very good, pleasant odor, it might lead you to eat it. And on chametz, we have to be very careful. So if you're talking about arla or basa b'chol of klai akerem, these are yisuri hanah. I could be matir reach because reich alav milsa. It's not a substance that's tangible. It's not a hanah that's tangible. But in the case of chametz, we have, you know, the Torah and the Rabbanan are very machmir chametz because of lo bedili minei, and therefore we have to be very careful about chametz, and therefore we should prohibit smelling fresh bread out of the oven, fresh gebacht as we call it. And it's interesting because, you know, at one point he's fighting against the Chemed Moshe because he thinks that it's a dover omed l'reach, and another point he argues against him because he thinks that it's also chometz also b'mashu, and therefore reicha milsa chometz. Now he says, forget about all that. You know, those are issues that belong mostly to hilchas brachas and hilchas kashrus and yoredeya. But as far as chometz is concerned, we have a whole other chapter, and that is shemiyovo liachlo, because chometz is lo bedili mina. So this business about smelling chametz, it seems that the Mishnah Berurah is not a happy camper with people who smell fresh baked chametz, which means that when you walk down the streets, you know, a lot of Jews, for whatever reason, go away for Pesach. Even Jews that normally live here in Israel, and they end up in various countries in the world where there's a lot of baking of chametz going on, right? So if you walk down the streets of Paris or any other city, you'll be smelling chametz left, right, and center. People should be aware of the fact that it's not so posh. Again, if you want to rely on the Chemed Moshe, you know, Yesh al Bilismo, but the Mishnah Berurah doesn't seem to be thrilled about it. You know, I would say that maybe there's a difference between taking the chametz into your hand and smelling it, as opposed to walking by a bakery. Now, if the Mishnah Berurah is worried about Shemiyov Liachlo, and I don't see that, you know, formulated in the Shulchan Aruch per se, it's a very logical reason, but maybe it only applies if you're holding the chametz. You know, you're a step away from eating it. But just passing by a bakery and breathing in the smell of the chametz, maybe that would not come under Shemiyov Liachlo. Then you have to deal with Hana per se. Are you benefiting from the chametz by smelling it? And maybe even here we could say, do I have to cross the street because they're baking chametz over here? I had this issue myself, not on Pesach. I used to walk on Shabbos morning in Queens, New York, to hear a shiur every Shabbos morning from Rav Olbaum. I don't know if you heard of him. Anyway, so in order to get from where I was located in my son's house in what's called Holliswood, and to get all the way to Kew Gardens where Rav Olbaum gave the shiur, I would have to walk by a McDonald's, and they make cheeseburgers, which is basa b'cholov, and I'm benefiting if I smell the thing. So I sometimes I was very machmir, and I crossed the street. Truth is, I don't know. I'm wondering out loud. Even if you assume that reach is a problem of hanor, maybe it's conditioned on the fact that you either seek out that hanor, you try to, you know, you get close to smell it, like in the case of incense, you know, you're miscarried, you know, or in a case where at least you enjoy the reach, even if you don't, you know, actively seek it out. But in the case of McDonald's, I didn't really enjoy the smell. Not because I'm a tzaddik, it just didn't appeal to me. So I'm wondering if that would be an isur reach, if I don't enjoy that reach. Is reach objective and other people would enjoy it? Or is reach subjective? And the question is, you know, do you enjoy it? Well, even if Yenem enjoys it, but you don't enjoy it. You know, Chazal in general say that if you see macholos asuris, you shouldn't say, well, it's disgusting, it's repulsive. I don't know if you ever passed by where they sell seafood, you know, they have a lobster, and they have a live lobster. I'm not sure, do they eat it live? Well, I don't think they cook it. They cook it. But they show it to you alive sometimes. Right.
So,
you know?
So you buy it fresh, I guess.
You buy fresh. So I find it quite repulsive. I don't know, I look at this lobster, it doesn't appeal to me, even though I was born in July, you know, and that's cancer. But I find it repulsive. But Chazal say something different. Chazal say that you should say, Adarab, I'd love to eat it, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu said not to eat it. And if I listen to the Gzeres HaMelech.
So how's that different from the cheeseburger?
So maybe in the case of a cheeseburger, you know, I'm saying, well, I don't like the smell of it. I just don't like, you know, when I walk by McDonald's, I don't like the smell. But maybe I should be saying something else. Adarab, I like the smell, but the Torah says I'm not allowed to smell it, or I'm not allowed to enjoy it. Like, for example, in the case of seafood, I have a friend. He's actually the president of a shul. He's a Baal Tshuva. And I know very well Stewie Krause. I said to him, Stewie, is there anything that you miss from the old days? I was just curious, because I'm an FFB, so I'm wondering what Baal Tshuva is missing in his life. So I had a few answers in my mind that I anticipated. He shocked me. He said, I'm missing seafood. I said to him, seafood? You mean that lobster and shrimp and all that kind of, right? He says, Rabbi, you don't know what it tastes like. It's me anal hour. That's what it tells me. It's a different taste. You've never tasted anything like... No, nowadays they sell these fake shrimps and all that stuff that are kosher.
Yeah, a woman that lived near us in Silver Spring, she was also bombed.
I don't remember you lived in Silver Spring.
I was there for 2 years.
Oh.
So she was a Baal Tshuva, and she was from in all aspects. Once a month she had shrimp. She couldn't overcome. She couldn't give it.
See, you know, you look at this stuff and you... My in-laws live in the Lower East Side, which is today like Chinatown. You know, it used to be Chinatown was a few blocks away, now the whole area. And, you know, they got these shrimps right down in the... You know, you just... Well, if you go to the East, you know, in the East, like, for example, countries like Thailand and so forth, there's no such thing as making food inside the house. Everything goes on outside the house. You can't move one step without smelling... And again, if it was shrimp, it'd be halibut, so I can't tell you what they eat over there. I'm not going to go into detail. My wife was very curious. She wanted to see what they're eating. I just couldn't go near it. I was so disgusted. But maybe the attitude should be the opposite, you know. Maybe there's something really special about eating shrimp, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu said not to eat it.
Gozer alai.
Yeah, you know, the Rambam tries to give, you know, some sort of health explanations, you know, in his Marnevuchim, for why the Torah prohibited certain things. But the Shita of the Rambam was never really accepted. And I don't even think modern science will back any of... Not, I don't say anything. I'm sure there's something in there that's intelligent. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff we shouldn't be eating that's kosher, you know, on a dietary level. Okay, now all this is d'oraisa. Now we get to the d'rabbanan. So let's go back to the Mechaber on the second line. He says the following. V'yasrua chachomim shtei shos kodem. So now we're talking about 2 hours before the beginning of the seventh. That means the beginning of the sixth is 1 hour. And if you go back another hour, it's the beginning of the fifth. So let's say on a perfect day, we're talking about not only 11 a.m., we're even going back to 10 a.m. However, as we'll soon see, there's a difference between the fifth hour and the sixth hour. Dahainu mitchilas shah chamishis. In other words, if you subtract 2 hours from Shavuos, which is the beginning of which is noon, you're going to go back to the beginning of the fifth hour, which sounds like people will make a mistake of 2 hours. Now that's a little bit of a stretch, because when the Rabbanan made this gzera, were they really afraid that somebody would make an error of 2 hours? You know, to confuse 11 to okay, 11 and 12, that makes sense, but 10 and 12, that's a bit of a stretch. But keep in mind, Rabbi Osai, as you know, these halachas were formulated by the Mishnah, and especially in Sanhedrin, where you're talking about Eidus, and there's a margin of error. You know, one Eid says it was at this point, and one Eid says, can we integrate the two witnesses? And in those days, they didn't have watches like we have. We, you know, they took time with the sun. So if it's a cloudy day, you could really make an error. Well, now... The Mechaber points out that although we extended the Isur Chomet by 2 hours earlier, but there's a difference between one of those 2 hours and the other of the 2 hours. It's not all Mikshachas. Umiu says the Mechaber, Kol Shachamishis Mutar Banah. So from 10 a.m. until 11 a.m., you're allowed to feed your dog. You can sell it to a guy. We'll see about Kiddushin, if you can give it to a woman for Kiddushin. And it only becomes Asur Banah with the beginning of the sixth hour. So therefore, in the fifth hour, Rashai Lemacholi Einu Yehudi, he can sell it, which is good news, because let's say he has an expensive bottle of whiskey, he should have sold it way earlier, but for whatever reason he was tarud.
He didn't find it till just now.
Right, he didn't find it, he didn't have a guy to sell it to, and now it's 10 a.m. on Erev Pesach, and the bottle is worth what? How much is a bottle of whiskey worth? A good bottle. Could be $250, am I exaggerating? Yeah, all right. I know that's Canadian. So let's say, you know, so the Mechaber is giving him good news. He could still sell it to a guy until the beginning of the sixth hour at 11 a.m. That's finito. It's afilu harbi biyachad. You know, he has a massive amount of whiskey, a common stick of whiskey, and he can sell it all to a guy. Oh, so now, okay, so there's another piece here which we'll wait for a minute because I wanted to catch up with the Mishnah Berurah. So that's going to be a machlokas based on Beit Shammai. Do you remember that? Beit Shammai says that you could only sell chametz to a guy early enough that the guy would be able to consume it before Pesach.
Same thing with Erev Shabbos. There's still the same thing with this.
Right, and it has to do with the case of Kutach HaBavli. You remember that case where this chametz in this kind of dip, this cheese, and it lasts a long time, because normally if I sell you something that's chametz, you'll eat it within a certain period of time. But if the chametz is only an ingredient in a dip, then it may last as long as 30 days. So Beit Shammai is going to require you to sell this Kutach HaBavli 30 days before the Chag. Beis Hillel doesn't agree with it. Beis Hillel says you sold it, then that's a guy's problem. Does he eat it or doesn't eat it? That's not your issue. And therefore, I can always sell chametz to a guy up until when? And here's the Mechaber's Chiddush, up until the beginning of the sixth hour. Even though chametz is asur b'achila in the fifth hour, I can still sell it to a guy. It's not asur b'ano. And this is a very fascinating anomaly, because so far we've never come into contact with chametz that's asur b'achila but mutar b'ano. It's almost antithetical. Because as we discussed before, with the beginning of the seventh hour, the Torah says it's asur under the pasuk lo yochel of chametz. And achila includes hana as well. So that's the entity of chametz. If you call this chametz, it means it's asur b'ano. Now we're saying I can call this chametz, but it's not asur b'ano. So here's where the briskers get involved. You heard of Rabbi Yitzchak Zev Alevi, the brisker Rav. So he says that chametz in the fifth hour is not really chametz. It's an isa gavri, he calls it. See, you have to have a Soloveitchik twist on this. And Ruvain, did you learn in yeshivas where they quoted brisker Torah?
Sometimes.
Where did you learn? I forget. No, you told me.
I
you learned to Chofetz Chaim?
No, I learned here in Chappelle's.
In Chappelle's. So they probably quote some brisket Torah there in Chappelle's. Well, was Rabbi Kolinsky around in your time?
Sure.
What about Rabbi Feigenbaum? Oh my gosh, wow. Yeah. He and I had a very special relationship. I actually taught in Chappelle's because of my relationship with Rabbi Feigenbaum. And then he had reason to go to Tech Camp.
In touch with him.
Yeah, you know, he created a great school for girls.
He's retired.
Oh, he retired.
He's in Toronto. No, he retired.
Oh, yeah, he retired.
He wrote a book on how to learn Talmud, methodology.
Yes.
So I'm sure Rabbi Feigman would have been comfortable with what we call brisket Torah. So the brisket Torah has it like this. I'm just going to summarize it. That in the fifth hour, it's an isa gavra, meaning that's not really chametz, but we want you to stay away from it. But in the sixth hour, it's really chametz, and therefore it's asur b'ano. And the nafkamini says is going to be not only selling it in the fifth hour, but also to be mekadesh and isha, because even though the sixth hour is only derabbanan, once it becomes chametz, you can't be Mekadosh and Isha with Chametz, even if Chametz the Rabbanan, which is a sugya in two places in the Sefer Pesachim. But with the fifth hour, that's not really Chametz, and therefore you can be Mekadosh and Isha. Now, I can't even begin to imagine that at 10 o'clock on Erev Pesach, a man is getting married to a woman, and he's giving her Chametz. Yeah, like, the Hechatzitz is wild. But Halach has to consider every possibility. You wanted to say something before?
You brought up about selling chametz to a nachri. There should be time enough for the nachri to consume the chametz.
Correct. That's Beit Shammai.
That's Beit Shammai. But of course, that doesn't.
Why? Because Beit Shammai is afraid. It's an interesting phenomenon. You know, I guess. I would introduce this by saying there are certain foods that are Jewish foods. Mm-hmm. You know, like kreplach, I don't know if the goyim eat kugel or kishka, I don't know, don't ask me. But there's certain things that the imprint of the Jew is, so to speak, on the food. And what Beit Shammai is worried about is that if they see a Jew selling this, let's say Kutach HaBavli, then the Jews themselves may fool themselves into thinking that it's not chametz. And therefore, if they buy it from the guy, it sort of like has a built-in hechsher to it. It's sort of like, I'll give you an example, it's not a good example, but you go into a restaurant, and you're not even sure about the kashrus, but you see a yid with bud and payas, you know what I'm saying, he's wearing a big black yarmulke, oh, it must be kosher. Now, he's probably relying on the guy who came in before him. But nobody actually asked for the tudah. So we really shouldn't rely on something. But in any event, when you sell something to a guy, the assumption is that it's kosher. So that's why the Gemara says you're not allowed to give a guy a yerech, a thigh that has a gid anosh into it, because the Jews might think that you already removed the gid anosh before you sold it to the guy. So there's all sorts of dinim that apply in the kashrus laws when you sell something to a guy. And Beit Shammai went very far with this as far as chametz is concerned. He said if you don't sell chametz in time to give the guy an ample amount of time to consume the chametz, then somebody might mistakenly think that, you know, there's no chametz. So you gave the hechsher. You know, it's pesedik of food. Right, if we learn the sugya Beit Shammai, that's okay. But I just want to see, what time is it now? Quarter, it's a quarter to 11?
Yeah.
All right, if you, can we, again, anybody has to leave, please feel comfortable. I would like to push it another 5-10 minutes just to see if we can wrap up this discussion here. And he says the following. This is the Mishnah Bura number Gimel. Do you have it? It's the first of the wide lines. Shtei Shos Kodem. Hatam. And I think what he's implying here in this question is, why 2 hours? That's a long period of time to allow for a margin of error. Mishum Yom Hama'unon. Again, he's assuming we tell time by looking at the sun. The Adam Asi Litos Az Shtei Shos. You could make a mistake even of 2 full hours. Kevin Cha'ein Shemesh Zorachas, meaning you tell time by seeing the sun on the horizon, but the sun is covered by the clouds. So you have a mistake here. You know, so you think, well, you know, the sun hasn't risen yet, or it just recently rose, and you think it's very early, but in truth the sun has been out there for hours, for 2 hours, and you're making a mistake. Now the Mishnah Berurah asks another question. How far do we have to go with this? You know, we have a principle called Ein Gozrin Gzera L'Gzera, right? You don't pile up one Gzera on top of another Gzera. Like, for example, the Gemara has a whole Shaila, if you're allowed to put on a table chicken and milk, you know, because chicken with milk we pass like Rabbi Yossi Gluy is only Durabanan. So that's one gzera ato basar. Now on top of it, you're not allowed to put them on the same table because you might come to mix them together. So that's called gzera l'gzera. Here also in chametz we could have a gzera l'gzera. Why? Because there's certain categories of chametz that are only Durabanan. They're not real chametz. The Torah doesn't recognize them as chametz. And one of the classic examples of that, there are other examples in Tarovis, which I think is the next Siman, and that is Chametz Nuksha. Now exactly what Chametz Nuksha is, I don't know. Let's give a simple, superficial understanding. It's Chametz that's Nifsal. Nifsal means it's not edible. It's too tough. It's already spoiled. You know, not spoilage. What's the word I want to use when you have a piece of bread that got
stale.
Okay, it's very stale. And at that point it becomes chametz nuksha. Shehu chametz derabanan. Now, if you're going to tell me that chametz derabanan is asur 2 hours before the Isur d'oraisa, then you're adding a double gzeira. You're saying, well, wait a minute. Maybe he's going to come to confuse the 10th, you know, 10 o'clock with 12 o'clock because of this Yom Hama'uno. That itself is a gzeira. And then you want to tell me maybe it'll confuse chametz nuksha with real chametz. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Gam kein asur bi'elu shtei shos. Once chametz, asur chametz. Whether it's chametz d'oraisa or chametz d'rabbanan, it's all asur. And once again, he quotes the Chok Yaakov and the Chemed Moshe in the footnote here in the Shara Atzil. Now, Rabosai, here I'll tell you that I've become a brisker. Why do I become a brisker? Because it seems to me that the only logical explanation for this tremendous chumrah, which seems to fly in the face of our principle of Ein Gozrin Gzera L'Gzera, is the Shem Chametz, meaning, when the Rabbanan prohibited something, did they prohibit it as a full blasted Shem Chametz? For example, if I were to ask the Mishnah Berurah the following question, Chametz Nuksha, is it Mutar Banah or Asur Banah? Maybe when the Rabbanan said, you're not letting Chametz Nuksha, that's only as far as Achila. But his premise is no, that Chametz Nuksha is Chametz, and all the dinim that apply to Chametz apply to Chametz Nuksha mid Rabbanan. So therefore, Chametz Nuksha has the Shem Chametz. I get the briskers might say it's a cheftishal chametz, I don't know. And therefore all the dinim apply, including the din of Shei Shol Salamal, meaning from the beginning of the sixth, or even going back to the beginning of the fifth hour. Do you follow my point?
Yeah.
that once chametz nuksha was elevated to the status of chametz on a derabbanan level, now it takes on all the dinim of chametz. And just like chametz is awesome in rabbanan from the beginning of the fifth hour, so too chametz nuksha is going to be awesome in rabbanan from the beginning of the fifth hour. The kolshkein, and how much more shall chametz al yidei tarovus? And I think what he means is that chametz al yidei tarovus is what's called a suffik d'oraisa, meaning there are certain situations in which, if the ratios are correct, meaning that there's a very strong volume, a very profound volume of chametz mixed into this tarovus, it might be also d'oraisa. If there's a smaller amount, a smaller volume of chametz, then it might be only also d'rabbanan. And again, all this has to do with chametz that got mixed up before Pesach. If it got mixed up on Pesach, that's called mashu, that's a whole different story. But if the tarovus was before Pesach, then it might be derabbanan, it might be d'oraisa. So if you're comparing chametz nuksha to chametz alidei tarovus, you have a kal v'chomer. We always have to be more machmir in chametz alidei tarovus than we are in chametz nuksha. But here he quotes the Noda B'Yudah, and this really is on the mark. This I get very, very excited about. I really want to start dancing. Because when I get to understand the Noda B'Yehuda, I'm excited about it. The Noda B'Yehuda was one of the most profound thinkers in Ashkenazic Jewry in 300 years. I happen to be the proud owner of a first edition of the Noda B'Yehuda. I'm not going to tell you what I paid for it, but that's a different story. And that was published by the Noda B'Yehuda in his lifetime. Most of the antique svarim were posthumously, were published posthumously. So I'm very excited about the Noda B'Yehuda. But really, seriously, the Noda B'Yehuda was a breakthrough posek. And he says the following, that yeah, chametz nuksha in the sixth hour, that's a good argument, because the sixth hour is chametz. And if chametz nuksha is chametz, and chametz in the sixth hour is chametz, I combine A plus B, hence chametz nuksha in the sixth hour is awesome. But when you go back to the fifth hour, that's not chametz. Or to use the Brisker Rav's terminology, that's only a Nisa Gabra, but it's not real chametz. And if that be the case, then even if I grant you that chametz nuksha is chametz mid-Rabbanon, but it's only awesome during an hour in which chametz is awesome. In the fifth hour, there is no such thing as an Nisa chametz. There's an Nisa Gabra, but it's not chametz. So the fifth hour, therefore, is not awesome in the case of chametz nuksha. That's a classic gzeirah l'gzeirah. You're afraid that if you allow him to eat chametz nuksha, he'll eat chametz gomer. You're afraid that if you allow him to eat chametz on the fifth hour, he'll come to eat chametz even after the seventh hour. That's already a gzeirah l'gzeirah. That's a double chashash. And that far we don't go. So Rabbosai, let's just make a note of where we got up to. We finished, I believe, Se'if Aleph. Let me just double check that. 1 second, where am I? Se'if Aleph Rashoi. Oh, we didn't do Harbe Yachad. Okay, so tomorrow, Belineder, we'll start with Afilu Harbe Yachad. So you're allowed to sell chametz during the fifth hour and benefit from the chametz, even if you're selling massive volumes to the guy, because we're not going to pass them like Beit Shammai. We're not going to require that you give the guy enough ample time before chametz to consume the chametz by Pesach. And therefore, we can be makel and rely on Beit Shammai, Beis Hillel, and that's how we paskin Afilu Harbi Yachad. And here we have a very important Mishnah Berurah, which Beli Neder will pick up tomorrow. So I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a great, great day, and thank you for joining me. Schreiber
has a cold. The cold is not coming.
Okay. Who's not coming? I'll bribe him. Why? What's with him?
He has a cold.
Oh, he has a cold.
So I'm going Thursday. I've worked with him already for years.